RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM, but we're now streaming live on YouTube, on Twitch, as well as X, the Everything app. You can also stream us audio only on the Odyssey app. You can also find us on the iHeartRadio app and the TuneIn Radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can also hear him the rest of the week with Connor Dunning on The Gabe Kuhn Show with Connor and George. Follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. How's it going?
It goes, my man. It goes. So we are going to have Tim Murray join us here in just a moment. We'll get his thoughts on the quarterfinals, everything that we've seen so far from the playoffs. The next segment, I wanted to start a fill-in-the-blank game in a couple of the categories I've thought of. So if you're out there thinking, feel free to play along as well. The game that you want to watch the most. The game that confuses you the most. The game that could change your mind the most. Team with the most to gain. The team with the most to lose. And then my personal favorite, the game that will produce the result with the most unfounded narrative. I always enjoy that one. If Indiana beats Alabama, Bama's dead. If Texas Tech loses, see, the Big 12's not real football. On the flip side, maybe if Oregon loses, perhaps maybe did Oregon not play anybody? Maybe we're just sleeping on Miami, and this is a Miami story. So we've got a lot of narratives abound that we can discuss. Had another interesting Monday night football game. Congrats to everyone that was in the finals with Bijan Robinson. That was a one-man wrecking crew.
Did not save Connor, though.
Did not maybe save Connor. Certainly, I got to two championship games, 0-2, baby. The Sunday night game was a disaster.
Don't tell me.
When you can... So basically, I went into both games with like a 65% chance of winning based on projections and whatnot.
Right.
When you see a pick six from Brock Purdy the first play, it does make you perk up a little bit. Okay?
Yeah.
Maybe. And then when you realized neither team was going to really provide any resistance whatsoever, and then this is the new ref crew. It's not Alex Kemp. There's another Alex. But they have been throwing more flags than any crew in the NFL this year. And when you just got the sense of, like, they were going to call everything and every drive was going to stay alive, you just knew you were absolutely dead. So congrats to my buddy Sebastian. Congrats to my buddy Heppel, who both took me down. I'd never lost a championship game, and then I lost two and right off the bat. So some might have said the odds were very much headed that direction. We'll discuss that Monday night game, and more importantly, whether or not this NFL playoffs is as wide open as at least it feels. I also have the question of whether or not maybe we have a new signal in terms of the NFL. Nikola Jokic got some good news today after what appeared to be a bad, bad injury last night, but he avoids season-ending surgery. We'll discuss that. Chip Kelly's got a new home. Tiger Woods turned 50 today, so I've got one friend in one of my college group chats that loves to point out, like, anything to make us feel old. And so Tiger Woods turning 50, I think, would qualify. There's also a narrative that I want to get out there that I feel like not enough people are talking about. We can discuss that as well. Take a look at some of the bowl games as well as the playoff games on our cards. Tell your story, and then we will get out of here. So, are we still waiting on Tim?
I mean, I have it just potted up. If
Tim, are you there? Okay, so I know Tim is recording his VSIN college football betting tailgate show. No, I beg your pardon. He is recording the VSIN college football betting podcast. So when he gets done recording, he's going to hop on with us. There's Tim. So I was letting everybody know that
Hey. You
are indeed recording your podcast, which will drop later today, I presume.
Yes. Usually we record on Thursdays, but we got some big football games on Thursday, so we had to do it a little earlier this week.
Of course, for those enjoying their first Jeffrey Wright and Company, Tim, of course, is the host of VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast, the VSIN College Football Betting Tailgate Show, VSIN Primetime. Download the VSIN Watch app. Follow him on the Everything app at One Tim Murray. All right, Tim, so I'll start with kind of the point that I'd made yesterday, but I wanted to discuss it with you. I actually think these quarterfinals are going to be a better data point for us moving forward with the 12-team playoff because, yes, we had the whole G6 aspect and that was going to suck up all the oxygen because apparently the only teams that ever get blown out are G6 teams in playoff games. But that was going to suck up. That was going to suck up all the oxygen. But to me, this is a huge part of the 12-team playoff. I am as fired up for these four games as I can remember, even probably being for the semifinals last year, which all delivered. I think this is huge that we need four really good games because I think we can fix the first weekend, and I think they're going to try to fix it. You cap the G6 at one, and you emphasize better tiebreaker rules for your conferences, make the ACC get in line, even though they're going to still have a league where some teams are going to play eight conference games and some are going to play nine. What a great great conference they've got running. I can't wait to see how they screw it up again next year. But the fact that we are, you know, compared to last year when we had to do the song and dance and we wanted to make the conference championship games matter, so we had the whole seeding issues. We have eight teams. All eight are inside the top 10. Like, I think this is a huge, huge data point for the 12-team playoff.
I couldn't agree more, and I'm right there with you, man. You know, as much as we spent all this oxygen talking about the first round, and you know, I think, to be honest, this year's first round was better than last year's first round, if we're being real about it.
I mean, the truth is, we got two very competitive games in the games that we expected two competitive games, and we got two blowouts in the games where we expected two blowouts.
Right, and, you know, Oklahoma, no, I wouldn't say Oklahoma, Alabama, and Miami, Texas A&M were masterpieces, but we had overtime in one game, and we had a 17-point comeback in another. I mean, both those ended up being compelling games. Not great football, but compelling games. But I'm with you, man. I look at these four games, and, you know, maybe later in the show we could discuss, you know, which game is most likely to be a blowout in our opinion. But I, as we've geared up more and more, and we're getting closer and closer, I continue to get pretty fired up about New Year's Eve. I think this game, even though it's the biggest spread right now, I think this game has the chance if Miami can do something offensively, and that's a big if. But their defense is that good that I think this has the chance to be a pretty compelling game, a competitive game, maybe not all the way to the finish. But, yeah, I mean, I look at these games, you know, Georgia, Ole Miss, we saw it already, and it was a game that was really fun to watch. You know, not a lot of defense in that game back in the middle of October. And then
two punts, you know, Georgia won. Did Georgia, did Ole, I know, no, Georgia never punted. Ole Miss punted at least once. I can't remember if they punted twice.
Okay, yeah.
It may have been, I want to say it was twice, but it got to the fourth quarter until they had a punt.
Right.
And Georgia scored on their first eight possessions.
Correct. Ole Miss scored touchdowns in their first five. Georgia scored on all eight possessions, and then whatever, they ran out the clock.
Kneel out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, man. I think, look, in hindsight, I think if we had, once again, Notre Dame fans speaking here, Notre Dame, Indiana instead of Indiana, Alabama, like, this would be just unbelievable. But I still think the four games have the chance to all be pretty compelling. Curious what we get from Alabama. They're a team that I think, I don't know how you think about the point spread. I think the point spread has maybe given them a little bit of reputation there. I think it should be maybe a little bit higher, but you know, we'll see how it ultimately plays out. It's supposed to be rainy in Pasadena on New Year's Day. So
apparently you and I are the only people that have noticed this.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like pouring.
Yes.
All game.
And I see everyone's like, smart people are taking the over. And I understand also rain doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a low scoring game. Like, you can get a sloppy game with some turnovers and whatnot.
People slipping on the field.
Correct.
Too,
and you can get wide open explosive plays. But I've seen a lot of people that I feel like are just assuming it doesn't rain in Pasadena. And I was telling George, my junior year of college, like, we went like a week and a half straight where it just rained. Like, this is one of the times of the year that it will rain. And this is like supposed to actually be real rain, like potential of flooding. It's going to be like four straight days of rain. I just feel like you and I are the only people that have paid attention to this.
Like, there's a legitimate shot that there's a thunder delay in this game.
Yes.
Like,
the only time I ever saw lightning in 4 years was in January of my junior year. Like, so, true thunderstorm.
Which is kind of sad because, like, growing up, especially on the East Coast when it was cold, you sit back and you watch the Rose Bowl and it's so beautiful and you're like, damn, wish I was there right now. And I've got a good buddy that I work with. He's been on the show, I think, before, Wes Reynolds.
Yeah.
He's an Indiana guy, and
he's our golf handicapper.
Yeah, he's one of the best out there, and he's an Indiana guy. And I'm like, sorry, bud. You're going to be headed out to your first Rose Bowl soaking wet. Maybe not full-on Aaron Andrews on the sideline of Buffalo, Philadelphia soaking wet, but
was anybody else
one of those get-ups?
Well, yeah, the full rain suit. Was anybody else confused to see it raining in Buffalo? Because
yes.
I was just expecting,
where's
the snow? Like, not that I understand that they're not immune to weather. It's just, it was very confusing in the last week of December to see, especially when we had seen at the Pinstripe Bowl that I know everybody was watching, and the Fenway Bowl, like, those games had snow everywhere, and then all of a sudden we just have, it's just dumping buckets of rain in Buffalo. I was like, where's the snow?
I love those two bowl games. They were, as you would say, played by some great men on the fields of those two particular
Find me young men of character.
Yeah.
So I guess this is kind of the other thing along those same lines, though. That point spread in Miami-Ohio State has me in a pretzel.
In which way?
I am sitting there going, the number comes out, I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of points. I want those points. Miami hasn't lost by more than a touchdown all year. I want the points. And then I'm like, wait a minute, you're stupid. Why would you do that?
So I was sitting watching some football on Sunday, and I'm like looking down at the betting board, and I see that Circa went to 10, and I'm like, huh.
What do they know?
I was like, might take a little nibble here, and that went away. I think we'll get 10 back. I think people want to bet Ohio State come game day. So I think if you're patient, you'll get a 10 if you want Miami, if you want the underdog.
I've done the thing where it's like, I'm almost fading myself. Like, almost like
you're in your head.
I think they're daring you to take Miami, and the right side's Ohio State.
And look, if Ohio State comes out and they're like, hey, remember when we had Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate? They're full strength now, and you can't stop them. And also, I think the worry would be if you take the points with Miami, are we going to get any offense from Miami in this game?
Well, like, I think it's a matter of...
Do you think Matt Patricia spent a month being like, hey, that Malachi Toney guy's pretty good. We should probably take him away.
Well, I think that it becomes a question of this, of do you buy that Miami can run the football on him?
I mean, Fletcher looked pretty good in the Texas A&M game. Now, Texas A&M's run defense is not Ohio State's run defense, but, like, I'll be honest, I know we'll do bets later, but like the way I envision this first half going, I think it's wildly boring from a point scoring standpoint. And that's why I bet first half under in this one, because I think Miami is going to be very playing it close to the vest, very conservative. These are two of the slowest teams in college football this year by pace. I think Ohio State, at least based off of P4 teams, is the slowest. I think it's like 31 seconds per play. I think Miami's like 63rd or 64th or something like that. So you got two really slow teams and two really good defenses. My question would be this regarding tomorrow night's game is, how good is Ohio State's offensive line?
I think there's two questions. It's one, do you think Miami can actually run it? Because I think if we're counting on our dear sweet white trash prince Carson Beck to have to like light up that secondary, I don't feel great about it. But if you tell me that they can run the football on him, well, now all of a sudden Carson Beck's going to get to throw a little bit more off play action, and we're talking about a little bit more open guys rather than just having him sit back. If they can't run the ball at all, then I can kind of smell blowout, because Carson's probably not going to play cleanly in that game. And then I think the other question is, on the flip side, we haven't really seen Ohio State go up against this kind of defensive line since probably week one. Because while Indiana's defensive line's good, they don't have like first-round NFL guys.
They don't have Reuben Bain.
Correct.
I mean, no one has Reuben Bain. Reuben Bain
Miami
is,
does. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess David Bailey, if you will, from Texas Tech. Both those dudes are elite. But they have Bain and Mezador. So it's like, all right, if we're going to chip Reuben Bain, well, Mezador might be able to get nuts on the other side, you know?
Well, and I think that that's the question, because...
That's why I think, I'll say this, and I just discussed this on the podcast, like, I think, I've been surprised how little... not effective Max Clair, the tight end from Purdue, has been for Ohio State. I think this is a game where Julian Sand could hit with him a bunch, right? Like, if they're feeling the pressure, all right, zing, out to our big tight end middle of the field. Like, I think Max Clair could get, like, six catches for 70 yards and just kind of be death by a thousand paper cuts against this Miami defense.
Do we have a player prop?
30 and a half receiving yards.
What about total catches?
3.5.
And is it juiced?
I think plus money on that 3.5.
Okay.
FanDuel, I believe.
Okay. Make every moment more. Ohio State is now second in terms of pace. The Gophers finally got them.
Oh. So what a game. What a game. Those boys were battling.
They did not give up. They did not quit. I meant to test my baseball stadium
Jason
under
Eck
theory.
Is a big fella.
Well, I was actually thinking about that. I think the guy's a heck of a football coach. I'm not sure. I want to believe that he has product in his hair when he wears the visor. But I was looking at him like, man, that guy's weight might cost him big jobs. Because he looked like he had like the fat guy sweats going. Like, it. And I think the guy's a really good coach. But like, I was sitting there going like, oh, man, like that's... It shouldn't be this way, but it is.
And that's a lesson in numbers matter, boys and girls.
Uh-huh. When you got said number.
3.5 and closed 1.5 and smacked on 3. I think Jason Eck is the next head coach of Wisconsin, is my prediction. Wisconsin guy.
What about the other Wisconsin guy that's also a former offensive, or he's a tight end, and he's not fat?
Who am I missing?
That would be our boy Sean Leonard, or Sean Lewis at San Diego State.
It could be a battle. Who has a better year next year? Sean Lewis lost his defensive coordinator.
I do think that's a job.
That game, by the way.
Oh, boy.
All time.
Well, like, I think it led Bad Beats.
It did. It closed Bad Beats. I haven't talked to you since because I had the bowl game last week. I had Oregon, and I had Oregon pretty strong, and that was pretty gruesome. I also had San Diego State, so I think it evened out.
Yeah, the one thing about Oregon was Oregon at least signaled to you if you could go find a live line to hedge, yeah, because they started playing a bunch of backups. You could see it coming.
That was my fault, you know, because like, I was in Boise you know, doing things with the family, keeping eyes on that. I was at a minor league hockey game and it was 48-13. I'm like, they're going in. Do I need to take 41.5 on the other side? Well, yeah, I should have, because as soon as they got that...
The no apparent reason pick?
Yeah, and then once... Even at the one-yard line, I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're going to score a touchdown. It's just the way this game feels like it's going to play out, and sure enough, it was the way it played out. But you know what? It all Jerry Seinfeld told us it all evens out, right? So San Diego State at a terrible number. Like, I bet them early, banking on everybody hitting the portal, which they have, but it was just after the game, and closed like 7.5. I had 3.5, and then they cover with 1 second to go. All-timer.
Yeah, and the ball was on the ground. Oh, boy. That was. And then
and they should have totally kicked a field goal. Realistically.
You knew, though, when the same kid for North Texas that intercepted the fourth down pass when he should have just knocked it down.
Yep.
Potentially
and
giving North
the pick.
Correct. When he dropped the pick, you knew what was happening.
I was
like,
watching
that, that's just one you don't even – you're like, I can just turn this off right now.
I was watching it in the car. We were driving back from the thrilling Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. Whew, man, that was
– I got – by the way,
tough one.
I mentioned this. I'm pretty sure that game was in standard def.
Really?
Yeah, like, you know, like they didn't have the bars on the side, but – when you have multiple TVs and then you have other screens on and all three of my TVs are the same brand, that one like stood out like Jefferson Pilot, old school SEC, snowy day.
I did
Is it raining there? Like
it wasn't raining. It was weather.
No,
was
I know.
That's
what the picture looked like.
The weather was spectacular.
And then Snoop was trying to give us a 2014 playoff.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Snoop, so I haven't told the story to you. So Snoop is just, he's out and about. He's doing everything. He conducts the bands at halftime, conducts air quotes. Like he's up there dancing and they're playing his songs. It's pretty cool. It makes for a low-level bowl game, just gives it a little extra juice. And, you know, he talks to the television side of things. So I'm waiting outside of the Fresno State locker room to get their coach coming back onto the field because I do the opposite of TV. So
yep.
I interviewed Miami's coach, Chuck Martin, on the way in because they were losing.
Did you maybe tell him cheer for old Notre Dame? Nobody loves Notre Dame more than Chuck Martin, the head coach of Miami.
Love Chuck Martin. I knew he was going to give me a good answer, so I wasn't too worried. Entz, by the way, classic ball coach. Came out, real raspy voice like this. He's got to finish in the red zone. But I'm waiting for Entz, and we're going to record the interview because we're, you know, back in studio.
Right.
And, you know, I'm, like, talking to the on-site engineer and just making sure we're rolling. And I see Snoop Dogg finishing up halftime, and he's walking over. And I'm like, he's walking towards me right now. I'm like, all right. I'm like, are you rolling? He's like, yeah, we're rolling. So Snoop comes up. He's like, hey, man, what's up? How you doing? I'm like... And I'm like, is he want an interview? Is this like a just walking by me type of deal?
Right. Is he just being polite and
right.
seeing?
So I'm like, what's up, Snoop? He's like, what's up, homie? How you doing? And he sees that I have the mic flag.
Yeah.
So that's helpful. And then I'm like, I don't think he really wants an interview. So I'm like, all right, what do I need to do? I was like, classic radio guy. I'm like, hey, Snoop, can you say you're listening to Bowl Season Radio? He's like, you're listening to Bowl Season Radio. And then just walked away, shook my hand. I was like, oh, that was kind of cool. So
well, that
made
also,
the whole broadcast worth it.
That's also, that was smart on your part because you don't wind up getting into that situation of, hey, Snoop, can I ask you a couple of questions?
Right.
You get the quick sound bite. He's ready to move on. You got what you needed. Like that's, I got to tell you, buddy, that's a professional. That's a man that's been on a sideline once or twice.
The gears were going. I'm like, I don't think this is going to be an interview because he was like walking by me, but he saw me. And he stopped, and I was like, all right. And then there was a gentleman from Bowl Season there, and he's like snapping pictures on the sidelines. So I'm like, did you get that? And he's like, no. I'm like, oh, dang it. I didn't get a picture of me with a mic in the face of Snoop Dogg. But he made the bowl entertaining. The bowl itself didn't necessarily. I've never seen. So I've done bowl games now for about 5 years. You know, I do about two or three a year. And usually after the game, everyone's just kind of meandering around the field, and it's super easy to get post game interviews.
Yes.
They're just like walking around, and you're the only one there. You're like, hey, talk to this guy.
And the season's over, so nobody, you know what I mean? Like, they're not, you know, like, and they're. Nobody's really worried. Like, the road team doesn't have to get out there that night. Like, yes, it's a good setup.
After the Snoop Dogg Bowl, it's never been more difficult to get an interview because every single player flocked over to the area where Snoop was going to be entering on the lowrider with the bowl trophy. I was like, where the hell are all the players? They all were congregated and clustered in. So I got one interview. Usually, like last year, it was very slowly developing. So they got their stuff together a little bit more. So, it was a cool scene. Weather was great. But, yeah, Fresno State probably should have won that game by more than 15. That's for sure.
Yeah, there was that game set quarterback play back for centuries.
Yeah.
All right, back to the good games that we have coming up this week.
The meaningful games?
Yeah.
The random-ass game on Saturday?
Well, because this is kind of the other thing I was thinking about. I'm curious about these Big Ten teams. Not from the SEC of, hey, they don't play. Like, I am someone that recognizes the most talented roster in college football resides in Columbus, Ohio. I have no problem admitting that. I do wonder, though, like, we kind of talked about this all year with Ohio State, in which, okay, we saw the Texas game. Our eyes tell us that this team is a great team, but they haven't really dealt with game pressure. I am curious to know how, you know, the only time we saw them deal with any game pressure at all this year after Texas was Indiana. And I don't think like they choked or folded. I think some things went against them. Saiyan slips on the quarterback sneak. I think if he keeps his feet, it's going to be a first down. And honestly, I think they probably score a touchdown, maybe win the game. But that's not how the sports played. You know what I mean? Like, it's that it doesn't work that way. And then when it came time for them to get off the field, they didn't do it. Like, I am curious to know how some of these teams, like an Oregon, that really have it, like, the games have gone a certain way. It's either they've been in control of the game or, like, you have the Indiana game, and I guess you could say you had the Iowa game where they kind of had control, but that was also such a crazy weather game that I didn't really know what to make of it one way or the other. But, like, I am curious about some of these teams that haven't really been in a ton of close games. Is that going to show up here in a playoff game?
Oregon, for me, from a betting standpoint, I haven't bet Oregon-Texas Tech yet. There's part of me that's like, Texas Tech has been so dominant, but then also, to your point, their 12 wins have all been by 20 points or more.
And I think if Morton plays, I think every game has been, yes, at least 20 points.
Right. They lost their lone game. Morton didn't play against Arizona State. They lost that game. They're 12-1 against the spread this year. But I also think it's worth noting, like, Oregon has played better teams. They played Indiana. Didn't play great, but they played Indiana. They went on the road to Iowa. They played USC. They played Washington. For whatever
it's worth. By the way, we got to talk about Washington here, because are they the college basketball metric manipulator? How is that team in the top 15 of SP Plus?
Because they blew out teams at home.
So they are. They're just metric manipulators.
Yeah, and they blew out Boise State. Like, they can't. They lost to Wisconsin. Like, what are we doing here?
Like, I don't understand, like, when you look and you see that is a resume win, and I'm not trying, this is really not an anti-Oregon thing, but it's like, how was Washington a top 15 team? Every time they went up against a team with a pulse, they got beat.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And then you have, like, you just have the simple question for Oregon Texas Tech. What quarterback do you trust more? And I don't have the answer. I'm asking a question. Dante Moore or Baron Morton?
I trust Dante Moore, pardon the pun.
But he's a better pro prospect.
Well, but I also, like, I don't know, like, man, that he's had some throws, like this year in the Iowa game, like when he just kind of, like, you're sitting there, if you were on Oregon, you're like, what are they doing? They're wasting time here. Like, he's kind of like, when they've had to have it, he's had some moments. The problem with Morton for me is, man, I just can't get over the fact that, like, basically Texas Tech decided to moneyball this of we're going to beef up our defense, we're going to beef up our lines, and we're going to kind of moneyball this with quarterback. And we're going to see if it's an experiment. And it worked for them. They're in the playoff. They got a bye.
Does Texas Tech have a good enough secondary? If they don't get home to Dante Moore, can they slow down these wide receivers?
So because Texas Tech plays a ton of zone, like they play basically like bend but don't break, but they have nasty guys up front, so it doesn't really matter. Like they just get home. There's going to be guys open. I don't know if like that'll be the question though. Also with Oregon is like, are we going to see some of these receivers coming back? Like, is Evan Stewart going to try to play for the first time all year?
He hasn't shown up yet in the media viewing portions of practice. Not to say that he can't play, but I will say, I mean, Moore and Bryant are full go, so that's big.
Like, I do wonder a little about timing with that, but I don't know, man. Like, we'll get into it because I'm going to do a fill-in-the-blank segment with you next.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. That is the game that has confused me the most.
I'm with you, man. I don't have a bet on the game. And I probably will come game day because you have to. I mean, New Year's Day, come on, what are you going to do? Would you say that's the game you're most excited to watch?
I don't know, man. It's going to be tough for me to ignore the helmets of Ohio State, Miami.
Get that nostalgia, 2003.
I mean, it's going to be kind of tough.
Jackson on the call.
Was Fouts next to him?
Yeah.
Was that still that was Jackson and Fouts? Do we have our boys Lynn Swan on the sideline and Jack Arute?
I don't know if Arute was there. I know Lynn Swan was there.
Yeah, it's gonna be
standard
tough.
Standard if ABC.
That oh
logo.
Boy. I still think it was interference, by the way. The flag got stuck in the guy's pants. Also, Miami, what are you doing screwing around there?
Like 11.5 point favorites.
Yeah, you could have put that game away. Like, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, Ohio State just came out with a great game plan. Like, that game went to, like, you couldn't get into the 20s, really.
I mean, it's taking a step back. How massive was the coaching edge by Ohio State over Miami? You had Tressel versus Coker.
Never forget, Coker's got the national title. Butch doesn't.
That's true. It was all Coker.
I will say maybe Jerry has a little something on the coach. It doesn't matter as much as the roster. Okay, so let's get to the other games because I think this is, as we head to Saturday afternoon, I am wondering if not enough is being made out of the Indiana defensive front line, the defensive lineman that's out.
Daly?
Yeah. That's not a super deep team.
No, and Daly's really good. Like, I do think it's fair. I think, and I asked this question just a minute ago on the podcast, which is, do they feel it against Alabama, or do they feel it in the semis? Because I look at this Alabama team, man. They cannot run the football. Like, they are allergic to running the football. And
what if they just do what they did, though, against Oklahoma? They didn't really even try.
Get Fernando Mendoza to throw a back-breaking interception on the worst read.
Well, I mean, he has thrown one this year.
It's true.
Now he came back
against Oregon.
Now he came back and went right down the field. But, like, I do wonder. I would imagine they're going to implement some of the same game plan that they used against Ohio State, which is they are going to have their safeties back 18, 20 yards. We are not giving up any explosives. Their linebackers are going to drop them almost immediately, and they're going to come up and tackle, and they're going to make you go the length of the field. I will say, though, if they're not getting pressure, I do kind of trust Ty Simpson to be captain check down all the way down the field.
Is Ryan Williams going to drop more passes?
I think Ryan Williams is going to spend more time on the sideline.
I mean, what happened to that dude? So, is he going to show up next year, like at another institution?
I think that's almost a certainty. I have a theory on him. Number one, I do think he spent a good portion of this year not healthy, so I will throw that caveat. I also think he is just a deep route guy. Like, he is a go route guy. And last year, what is the one thing that you trusted Jalen Milroe to do throughout his career at Alabama?
Deep ball.
And I think it was like the perfect setup where Milroe's such a good runner. Williams, a lot of times, is going to get one-on-one, run deep, Milroe throw it deep. And it's a lot of that. It wasn't a ton of like, man, look at him run the route tree. So I'm not saying like I'm out on him as a player. I mean, gosh, he's only 18 years old now. But I do think he probably was elevated to a level that his skill set probably wasn't at last year. Compared to like Tony, which I trust Tony to do everything.
Now, Horton has stepped up massively.
Yes.
For Alabama. Like, he's filled the void. He had 5 catches against Oklahoma. And Bernard's been awesome. Like, he's been really good. So,
and the new Brooks that confusingly wears 17, but not 7. They've got another Brooks. That's confusing to me. And the tight end's been good.
So but I guess circling back to if it's pouring rain, I think that is not good for Bama. Because I think Indiana would be fine grinding this thing out, and they've shown their ability to grind games out.
The only thing I wonder about is if Alabama can. Are we sure? Like, if it's a sloppy track, if Alabama can scheme up a couple, like, are we sure that Indiana can come from all the way behind? Like, we saw it against Penn State, but what, they were down 7?
Yeah, they trailed most of that game, didn't they?
No, remember they led most of the game and then it flipped on a dime.
That's right.
Like, they another interception by Mendoza.
They didn't go down against Oregon, but they got tied in
yes.
the fourth quarter against Oregon, and then they, as you pointed out, already went right down the field.
Right.
Weren't trailing against Ohio State. But that was
trailed in the second half, or didn't trail most in the second half. Like, once they took the lead, they never give it up.
I just don't think Alabama's that good. I just think it simply boils down to it. Like,
I know, but I also wonder if that's a trap.
I'll be honest. I have, you know, from a betting standpoint, I have not bet this game. Like, yeah, you mentioned, and we could talk about Georgia here, I'm sure, but like, I look at that line, I'm like, ugh.
Well,
my initial inclination was like, I like Bama, and then I've kind of talked myself out of it because I think there is, I don't know if there's blowout potential, but I think there's SEC championship suffocation potential where they just look like complete ass.
So Grubb made an interesting comment after the Oklahoma game. Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator, for those that are not 100% up to date with all the offensive coordinators in the SEC, that him and DeBoer had really preached, we have really good players, the game is never completely done. And essentially, he was basically admitting he thinks that they quit in the SEC championship game. But they didn't quit against Oklahoma. Now, I also think it's fair to point out, like, Oklahoma's offense, even down 17, if you go down 17 and you still got 3 quarters to make it up, you can feel okay. But I do also wonder if that was kind of a flipping of the switch for them.
I kind of hope so. Like, I would love to see a classic Rose Bowl. And look, this is an Alabama team that I thought was going to win the national championship coming into the year. And
the swings on Alabama this year were amazing. To go from talking yourself into, I think this team can win the national title because you were not alone, to after week one, he's getting fired, to what was that win streak they went on? Was it 7 or 8 in a row?
Well, and they also had the middle of the season in part of that winning streak, which was like the most ridiculous stretch of the football.
They beat Georgia, they beat Tennessee, they beat Missouri on the road. Like, they had
Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Vanderbilt. They had an impressive stretch to where you're like, this team's a national title contender, to really the last month of the year. Because I'm forget it, you're a Notre Dame fan. I just, after the SEC championship game, I knew they had injuries and whatnot, but I was like, I'm just kind of done with this team. To now where I've kind of talked myself into, they kind of have the path to get to the championship. I'd rather be on that side than the other side, where I got to beat, oh, you're telling me I got to beat Georgia and Ohio State?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the bracket is much better from that standpoint. But I guess my devil's advocate to that would be, are we intoxicated by the helmet? Because we see that helmet for the past 2 decades be the helmet in the sport.
So I'm not intoxicated by that, because I feel like I was one of the Bama ain't Bama. For like Topmeyer and I used to have a theory that Bryce Young and Will Anderson kind of papered over really a lot of the cracks of the program, like that you could see. So I just know that there's still plenty of talent on that team. And Indiana is deserving of the number one seed, the number one ranking. But I do wonder if, like, I think they got the right spot to play Ohio State. Right after the exorcism, Ohio State was not sharp. And not only that, Indiana could have folded up and they buckled down. Like, remember, they had the turnover late or the turnover early. Like, that game could have gotten out of hand quickly, and it didn't. And I give them all the credit for that. But I'm still like, if this game gets in the 20s, I'm still not super confident that Indiana has, like, that gear.
They might not. I do like their playmakers.
I like Surratt. The kid from Father Ryan that I watched have 3 catches for 165 yards before he hurt his knee. I was like, oh, it was nice to see Ohio State couldn't cover him either, because the Owls couldn't. I don't know. I think, you know what it also comes down to? I'm not a stockholder in Fernando Mendoza. And I've done this weird thing with him. When I first saw him when he was playing as a freshman at Cal, I was like, I kind of like this kid. But it's like the more and more I've got him, and maybe like the more and more everybody else, it's like I still don't love him. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve every trophy that he's gotten.
I don't know if I love him as the number one pick in the NFL draft, but I like him quite a bit as...
I also can't get over DeBoer as a dog.
He's good as a dog, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good as a dog. All right, let's continue the conversation. Tim, I got some fill-in-the-blanks for you. We're going to discuss those next. A couple of the ones that we got in mind, the game that you want to watch the most, the game that confuses you the most, we've already discussed that, the game that could change your mind the most, team with the most to gain, team with the most to lose, the game that will produce the most unfounded narrative. We'll talk about all that next when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right. Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try assemble and bake today. Get 20% off your first 2 orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Time, or I should say, all right, Tim, time for some fill in the blanks. I gave you my answer to this one, but the game that you want to watch the most, we'll use the stipulations of if you could clear out the house. It's like, all right, just some me time, all alone, just locking in. What's that game?
I think it has to be Oregon-Texas Tech for me. I think it might be the answer to some of the other fill-in-the-blanks, but it is the shortest of the four games point spread, but it's not the sole reason. I want to know if Texas Tech is as good as we think they are, right? They've been, I think it's fair to say they've been the most dominant team in college football this year. They are 12-1 against the spread. The 12 wins, as we mentioned already, have all come by 20 or more points. They blew out BYU multiple times. Like, how good is Texas Tech? And then Oregon, I think, Jeffrey, to an extent, people are, you know, a lot of, like, I'll just talk from a gambling standpoint, a lot of the air quotes sharp guys that I respect, they were looking to fade Oregon this year. And they didn't win, right? They went 11-1. The wise guys, that is, didn't win. I bet against them against Washington. They won that game even with shorthanded offensive line and shorthanded wide receivers. And then they played James Madison, and, you know, they're up big, and then they kind of let them come back. So I think we are going to learn a lot in the Orange Bowl on New Year's Day. And let's just be honest, how perfect is that game, right? Noon Eastern, 11 a.m. your time, 9 a.m. my time. You're probably a little bit groggy from the night before. That is the perfect, like, I don't want to do anything. Give me my electrolytes and let me watch this game on television.
Yeah, I tip my hand. I can't. I understand that it's got the biggest point spread, but there's just something about this Miami-Ohio State game that intrigues me.
It's number two for me. I'll say that.
So I've got no problem with that. The game that confused me the most, for everything that you just listed, Oregon and Texas Tech, because I think both teams are good. My eyes tell me both teams are good. I'm not certain of it. I mean, I'm not even just talking about the second half when Oregon had their second team in. JMU moved the ball on Oregon better than they moved the ball on Troy.
Yep.
Didn't finish the drives, but they moved the ball. And with Texas Tech, it's like, I believe in your defense, but I don't know if I believe in your offense.
And I look at Oregon and I say, okay, who are the four best defenses you face this year?
For Oregon.
Okay. Indiana, Iowa, Washington, and Wisconsin, based off of just numbers.
Yeah.
They average 21 points per game, 4.4 yards per play, and 340 yards per game against those four defenses. Like, they were getting chunk play after chunk play against JMU. Okay, are you able to do that against Texas Tech when David Bailey's trying to rip off Dante Moore's head or Jacob Rodriguez is out there making insane play after insane play? So I think most intriguing and most confusing kind of work together.
No, for sure.
This one.
Because it can just simply be a, I don't know what to expect, so therefore let me sit down and watch. All right, the game that could change your mind the most. I'll start on this one. If Miami pulls this off, do we have to start talking about Cristobal differently? I'm going to say no.
I would say no because
we still have a lot of other evidence.
I mean, they lost to SMU. They lost to Louisville. You know, they lost to Syracuse last year at the end of the season when all they needed to do was win that game. They blew that game against Georgia Tech in one of the most ridiculous fashions ever. You think about Justin Herbert, him having Justin Herbert and, you know, not being able. I mean, they won the Rose Bowl, but you just wanted more from that Oregon team. So I think he would have to do it again. If that's, even though that might not be fair, but like you kind of put yourself in this situation, Mario.
No, I think that's more than fair because also, if we want to put the Louisville loss on Beck, which I'm fine with, because
the SMU loss is on him.
The SMU loss was 1,000% on
him. The Syracuse loss a year ago is on him.
And while
you had Cam Ward and you kicked a field goal, never got the ball back.
The Georgia Tech one, he had like a bad timeout, but it still was like they couldn't stop the run. So like that one was less, but I agree with you.
The Oregon year with Justin Herbert not making the playoff, like, that was egregious.
Yeah, you know, I don't have the Herbert gene.
I had the Herbert College gene.
And
you saw him against, who do you play, Wisconsin?
Wisconsin.
And he ran for like four touchdowns. You're like, holy God, how is this dude not in the playoff right now?
Well, it's because Wisconsin let him get outside and run on him. If you make him sit back and throw from the pocket, like he's going to throw a fastball to, you know, to a guy 5 yards away, it's going to bounce off his hands for a pick.
I think my answer to the question is Georgia. If Georgia comes out and curb stomps Ole Miss, which I kind of think could happen, we might look at this Georgia team and be like, you know, they're probably the best team in college football.
And I think that's kind of where it's trending. And I think that's what's interesting about it is,
like, the defense wasn't there. We know it wasn't, right? Against Tennessee, against Ole Miss. Teams can get better, which I know is shocking to the committee. Teams can get better. And this team played elite against Texas, elite against Alabama. But there is that kind of like weird, like, what the hell happened against Georgia Tech? Like, what happened in that game? Was that just like you guys really not caring about Georgia Tech? Maybe.
Well, I don't know. That was a weird game because
they had a post-game win expectancy of like 40% in that game.
Yeah, but if you watched it, they kind of suffocated Georgia Tech.
The defense, I think we might, and I say we, the collective we, like the college football world, I think we might be overlooking Georgia, which is crazy because they're a multi-time national championship program under Kirby Smart, but, and you live in the South, so maybe it's different, but like, if you watch ESPN, are they talking about Georgia at all?
No, and I don't really have, I don't think it's an overlook thing. I think it's that so much in the South, all of the oxygen has been sucked up for the last 6 weeks by Lane Kiffin. It's actually an interesting subplot to me. I think we always talk about, you know, the Nick Saban disciple group chat with Kirby and Lane and all those guys. Kirby low-key, like, he's popped Lane pretty good. Like, Lane got him last year, but this year, like, Lane kind of got a couple of the big plays, but on the flip side, it's like they're maybe because Kirby runs the same defense that Golding does, like, they have had very good offensive plans against Ole Miss. Like, two of their best offensive performances in the Kirby Smart era have been against the Ole Miss defense.
And maybe I play too much into the Kirby brings up, you know, the past and the doubters. You don't think it's playing to Kirby that the last time they were in this spot, they lost? Like, they won the SEC last year. They lost in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, I think that was also a weird week because you had the,
oh, it was super weird.
You had the terrorist attack, and then yep. Kirby's dad dies that week. Like, there was a lot going on.
It was also a weird game.
Yeah.
Notre Dame threw for like 80 yards.
Well, then you had the weird kickoff. You know, it kind of felt like Georgia was stabilizing, and then you got the kickoff return. I'm not saying weird because we've talked about Notre Dame special teams. Like, that's not an accident.
It was fun, and they had two. Remember, they were driving early, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And then they fumbled. ETN fumbled. Yeah, it was a wacky game a year ago, and, you know, it was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll be honest. The first bet I made when the quarterfinal lines came out, I laid 6.5 with Georgia. And you know I don't lay points really all that often. I kind of felt like it was the perfect storm where Ole Miss did what they were supposed to do. They were all fired up. They played exceptionally well against Tulane. And now I have to get Pete Golding, for the first time in his life. Has he ever been a head coach before?
Nope.
First time in his life, coming off of a win, focusing in on Georgia, and Kirby Smart has had a month to prepare for this game.
Well, then on top of that, where I do think Ole Miss is going to miss Lane the most was, because I was at that game, they were not great on third down, and that's like kind of when Lane does the whole whistle, changes the play, and gets what he wants. Like, I think that's where they're going to miss him the most. But also in that Georgia game, like, he had a couple of, you know, look to the sideline whistle and, like, got a couple of explosive plays. Like, are they still going to have that? I don't know.
It's also, that was the game, that was, Kwon Lacy was held to 31 yards in that game.
Yeah, Lacy's biggest contributions in that game were pass blocking. And, I mean, that's the other question with him. It's like, he's banged up with the shoulder. He's going to play, but like for how long? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like well, oftentimes what you see when the shoulder pops out is it pops out again. Like that's not unusual.
Lastly on this game, how big is Colby Young in his return?
George, what do you think?
I mean, I think he's their second leading receiver, hasn't played since mid-October.
My thing is, I think they're just going to pick on Ole Miss's safeties.
Yeah, and that's usually how you've been able to do it. Mainly on Kite.
Yeah.
Wyatt Williams has actually been pretty good the second half of the season. He's been really stout, but
I mean, they abused Ole Miss's safeties in the first game. I mean, I will say this though, from the Ole Miss perspective, that receiving core is wildly underrated, man. I'm telling you, I saw them in person. They get open. They get separation. They're good. And the one thing that's kind of given the Kirby Smart defense is if you got to cover three or four guys and you got a guy that's willing to chunk it, I don't know.
Think back to the Tennessee game.
Yeah. Now, granted,
the defense wasn't playing well then.
Earlier in the season, young guys that were playing, you know what I mean? And Lane's not there to scheme it all up. So, I don't know.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.